If you picked up a copy of the Voice of Truth International this morning, you may have started to flip through there. There is an article that I found to be especially interesting on page 76. This particular article talks about a Christian school teacher and how she was with about six of her students one day, and she related how she had been married for a period of 38 years. She still is married. And as she told this fact to the school children, they were absolutely amazed. If you look at this particular story, you'll see this quote. The children are reported as saying, "I thought you were supposed to get divorced after a couple of years. Why have you stayed together for almost 40 years?" Our society has become confused. It's become confused about simple things, basic Bible truths such as marriage. The confusion is so bad that we are now at a time where children ages 12, 13, this is the age group that's described in this particular article, they have no concept. They've lost the truth when it comes to things like marriage. This evening, I want to look at marriage from a negative perspective. I want to spend some time on false concepts about marriage. Then next week, Lord willing, we'll look at the flip side of things. We'll look at marriage from a positive perspective. One of the first false conceptions about marriage, I think, is the idea that it is something that people really need to do. When we look at our particular society, we find in Western culture, in America, that a lot of people feel peer pressure to get married. Sometimes, as we hear men and women talk, they refer to the ticking clock. I need to hurry up and find someone. We need to hurry up and have a family because the clock is ticking. Single women are sometimes asked, "Well, when are you going to get a husband? When are you going to get married? When are you going to have children? Everybody else has done this, and why are you so behind the times?" Some are even told that time is running out for you. You better hurry up. By the end of the year, by the end of this particular time, as far as your age, you need to go ahead and get on board with finding someone. Join the rest of us. We live in a time, and this is true even in the church, we live in a time where some people look at the single state as almost like a fatal disease. You're not married yet? What's wrong with you? Why haven't you found a spouse? We need a reminder from time to time that being single is not a sin. The Bible does say, and we are certainly interested in making this point plain, the Bible certainly does say that marriage is an honorable estate. It is an honorable thing if we abide by God's laws. Early in the Bible, the second chapter of Genesis, chapter 2, verse 18, we are specifically told that it is not good for a man to be alone. Adam was created, and then God, shortly after that creation, believed that Adam needed a suitable helper, and a female companion, Eve, was created for him. And it's true that we do need at least some people to marry to keep the human race going. I mean, if nobody gets married, it's not going to work out well for the population of the planet. While some feel the need to marry, and some certainly do make this choice, it's also the case that not everyone should feel compelled to marry. The Bible also, as we think about the single state, specifically says in places like 1 Corinthians 7 that some are best served as far as a single state. In 1 Corinthians 7, verse 8, towards the beginning of this chapter, Paul there talked about the unmarried. Apparently that refers to those who have never been married, as well as the widows. And Paul said for these folks who have never gotten married, and for these individuals who would be classified as a widow, Paul said it's best for you to avoid marriage. Then in the next verse, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9, Paul said there may be some circumstances, and he mentions one specifically, where you will want to get married. And then as we continue through the chapter, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 26, Paul says there was a present distress that involved the Corinthians. We're not told exactly what this distress was. But whatever the circumstances, Paul says that things are right now in such a state where it is better to remain in the single state rather than to get married. But if you can't do that, verse 9, you are permitted to marry. Today, people might choose to remain single for a variety of options. 1 Corinthians 7 has a couple of those. I recently spoke up with a man within the last week who said, "I'm just not, you know, a lot of people are talking to me about getting married, and this is my particular age, and I've dated some. But," he said, "Brad, I am just not ready to start a family right yet." And I said, "Well, that's good. That's good that you have looked at your situation and you have logically thought about where you are in life and you realize you've got enough sense to understand that you are not at the point where you are ready to take on, to assume the responsibility of a family. As long as this man has this particular mindset, he needs to stay single." Now, that's not my opinion. It's the Bible. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, Paul said that if any provides not for his own, he's worse than an unbeliever. So if a person is thinking, especially a man, is thinking about marriage, Paul says you have an obligation to provide for your household. Well, in this particular situation, this fella is not to that point. So Paul says you don't want to put yourself in this kind of situation. If you're not ready to support a family, stay single. Do not get married until this circumstance changes. Paul also said, 1 Corinthians 7, this time a little later, verse 32, at least midway through the chapter, he said that there are some people who decide to stay single so they can do more for the sake of Christ. There are sometimes people who could go out and find a mate and presumably have a wonderful life. But Paul said there are some people who are so interested in serving the Lord, they decide to remain in the single state so they don't have the additional responsibilities that come with a mate. So there are various personal circumstances that might cause an individual to say, I'm going to stay single. And the Bible says this is a wise, this is a right choice for some folks. When we think about the single state, the Bible also tells us that some may remain in a single state because this is actually required by God. Now, we're only going to read from two places tonight. One's going to come a little later from the book of Deuteronomy. The other reference is going to be read now from the book of Matthew, Matthew chapter 19. This is a place where Jesus talks about marriage as well as divorce and then remarriage. In Matthew 19, verse 12, he said, for there are eunuchs, eunuchs that were so born from their mother's womb. And there are eunuchs. These eunuchs, he said, were made eunuchs by men. Then a third category. There are also eunuchs that made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. We're interested in the third category or the third type of eunuch. Jesus said there is a kind of person who is like a eunuch. This individual chooses not to be involved with the marriage for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Now, if we look at this particular statement as well as the other two, and we examine the context, we find that the context of Matthew 19, verse 12, specifically involves divorce and remarriage. There are some people in life who get involved in a divorce. And because of the circumstances involving that divorce, they do not have God's approval to again remarry. Now, these people can go to heaven. They can please God. But for them to go to heaven, for them to please God, they have to remain in that single state. Because if they were to again marry, they would violate God's law about marriage and divorce and put their soul in spiritual jeopardy. Now, some people, and I'm thinking of one man in this area in particular, he's a Christian. He's violated God's marriage law, and he says, I just can't live without a woman. Well, Matthew 19, 12 says there are some people that need to make themselves a eunuch for the kingdom of heaven's sake. I've never found someone who dies because they're not married. It can be difficult. It can be a challenge, but it can be done. It is better to live a single life for a few years on earth. And I mean few, maybe in the sense of 5, 20, or 50 years. Maybe a couple beyond that. It's better to live single and go to heaven than to involve ourselves in a relationship that we're not entitled to and be lost. In Matthew 19, 1 Corinthians 7, the Bible makes it very clear that marriage is a very serious matter. But when it comes to the single state, in the church, the Christians, and certainly outside the church as well, the people who decide to remain in a state without a mate, we need to support them in this choice. It's better to be alone, home alone on a Friday evening, than home alone, than home on a Friday with the wrong person. A second false concept about marriage is the one that's expressed by the group of teenagers I mentioned at the beginning of this lesson. It's a common view now, not only among teens, but also among adults, that we'll get married, and we'll stay together for a little while. We'll stay together as long as it's fun, as long as we enjoy one another, as long as nobody better comes along. And then at that point, if we decide to go out and find someone else, we will. Now, part of this may be based on our culture. We live in a place, America, where people are accustomed to trading things in. Have a cell phone? 6 months later, let's trade it in. There's something newer, there's something better out there in the market, so let's get a new one. We'll swap out the old for a new one. Same thing is true with jobs. It used to be 30 years ago, a person would get a job at a particular company and they might stay there for life. Generally, that's no longer the case. People will switch jobs throughout their working years. Does God care if we trade mates as frequently as some trade cell phones and cars? He does. God's very concerned about the choices we make when it comes to mates. And we don't have to look very far in the Bible. In fact, we don't have to get to the New Testament to find this truth being expressed. You may remember in the final book of the Old Testament, the book of Malachi. Malachi chapter 2, verse 16, God says, I hate divorce. Three words. Three simple but three very powerful words. This is about as plain, this is about as forceful as any statement ever made by God. I hate divorce. Powerful message to the people of Israel. Now we in our culture sometimes use the word hate in a very loose or careless way. A child, for example, might say, I hate spaghetti. Well, that child who hates spaghetti, if his choices for supper are spaghetti or fried mice, he's probably not going to hate spaghetti. I'll look forward to the spaghetti, Mom. Leave the mouse for somebody else. You see, for us, hate usually doesn't have that strong sense of disgust or abhorrence. But God wasn't using the word hate in that kind of way. When God said, I hate this, he meant I hate this. This is something that turns my stomach. This is something that angers me. This is something that really upsets me. God was not exaggerating. When we look at our world, when we look at American culture, what do we find? We find a time where divorce is so rampant, it is almost at an epidemic rate. A man that my dad used to fish with. I first met him, I suppose, about 15 years ago, and usually when I go back to Illinois, I have a chance to see him and talk to him. And this man has gone through, and I'm not kidding, this man has gone through wives just like fishing boats. He loves to fish, and he's gone through a lot of boats. But he's also gone through a lot of wives. He finds one that he likes. He keeps her around for a while, and then he throws her back into the lake for someone else. Well, not literally, but figuratively speaking. God says he hates that. When it comes to husbands and wives, God says, let me tell you this, there's no trade-in plan. You don't keep that person until the good health or the pleasant appearance, whatever it is, wears off. God says, you make that choice, and you make this choice for life. God says, my plan is you leave your parents. And then that woman, that man that you take, you cleave to this individual. Genesis 2, verse 24, right there in the beginning, God said, leave and cleave and become one flesh. The devil's good at what he does. The devil is so good at what he does that he's been able to achieve widespread divorce in our culture. The devil likes to promote divorce. And not only does the devil like to promote divorce, he likes to promote a remarriage that allows a person to enter into a relationship which God says is wrong. Now, people have been getting divorces for a long, long time. In fact, when Jesus was on the earth, divorce was a very common practice. We already saw from Matthew 19, verse 12, that this topic is discussed in this section of Matthew's book. Matthew 19, 3, towards the beginning of the chapter, we read about some Pharisees. These Pharisees came to Jesus and they said, okay, is it lawful? Is it permissible? Is it authorized for a man to get a divorce for any reason? And then these fellows even went so far to say in Matthew 19, verse 7, Moses commanded us to get a divorce. Well, Jesus said, let's go back and study these scriptures. Let's go back and see what Moses actually said. Moses didn't command it, Jesus said. The Lord said Moses permitted. Moses allowed this because your hearts were hard. And then Jesus said, let's also, if you want to talk about divorce and remarriage, let's go back and see what God's plan was. Let's go back to the beginning. In Matthew 19, verse 4, Jesus said, have you not read? Don't you have a copy of the Old Testament? Don't you know what the book of Genesis teaches? Don't you know the story of Adam and Eve? God created just one woman. The plan for Adam was you take this woman, you leave the single state for him, and you cleave to this woman for life. People, when they get married, they're supposed to keep their mate for life. So choose that spouse very, very carefully. Oftentimes, divorce results because a person has a hard heart. Matthew 19, verse 8. Marriage can be difficult. But Paul says during those times, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 11, you learn how to work it out. You learn how to reconcile with your spouse. Now, prior to the New Testament, God allowed some people to do some unsavory things. The Bible is clear on this point. There were some men who had multiple wives. Now, that wasn't God's will, but again, because of things like hardness of heart, God permitted this. Acts 17, when Paul talks about the times of ignorance, God winked at it or overlooked. He permitted some things. This would seem to fall into this particular category. There were other cases under the Old Testament system where men often divorced their wives for all kinds of reasons. But in Matthew 19, Jesus said, let's talk about divorce. Let's talk about marriage. He went back to God's original plan and said, this is the way it was. A New Testament is coming, Matthew 26. And with the New Testament, what's God going to do? He's going to raise that standard back up where it's one man, one woman for life. unless there's unfaithfulness. And then in that event, a divorce isn't required, but it is permitted. And the Lord's teaching was, now you pick your mate, you keep that individual till death. A third idea about marriage that's a false concept is that it's always going to be fun. Out of all the people I've talked to who wanted to get married, and maybe I had some part in helping them be joined together, each one thought that it was going to be a relationship and they were just going to have years and years and years of perfect bliss. It doesn't work that way. It is possible, and we believe that by applying biblical principles, people can have a great marriage. But the fact that divorce is such a prevalent problem in our society shows that the idea that marriage is just going to be years and years of unending bliss, that's simply not the way it works. Marriage is going to have some difficulties for folks. If marriage was always fun, people would not be so prone to divorce. The Bible has some examples, some great examples, to show that marriage can be a wonderful, a blissful, a great state. But you know, it also has some examples that say that marriage can be a very difficult relationship at times. We'll not go back and look at it, but you may remember the story. 1 Samuel chapter 25, it's a story about a married couple. The woman was a lady by the name of Abigail. And Abigail's husband was a fellow by the name of Nabal. Abigail had her hands full with this guy. When we go back and look at some of the details in verse 17 of 1 Samuel 25, her husband Nabal is called a worthless fellow. That's probably going to make it difficult for a woman who's married to this kind of man. The next two verses, verses 18 and 19, talk about how Abigail had to go back and try to undo some of the damage that had been done by a worthless husband. There have been some ladies, sometimes some great women, who have ended up with some terrible men. And there have been some men, some good men, who have also ended up with some very bad women. Proverbs 27 verse 15 says that there's some women who are cranky. There are some women who are contentious. And if you're a man and you're married to a cranky woman, it's like a constant dripping of rain. Not a pleasant thing. So on both sides of the fence, males and females have made some bad choices. Many have what might be referred to as a romanticized idea, an unrealistic view of marriage. Oh, we're going to get great, it's going to be great, and it's going to be so wonderful. We need to teach people the joys of marriage, but also the challenges associated with marriage. Another false concept about marriage is that if we enter into this relationship, every problem, or almost every problem that we have before the marriage, will somehow magically resolve itself after marriage. It'll all just work out somehow. Well, this is, I think, probably more prone to those who are really young rather than those who are maybe over 30, but it's still a fairly common view. Generally speaking, whatever problems there are before marriage, they're going to not only continue after the marriage, they're going to increase. At least a few of us have seen a situation, and I'll use drinking as an example because it's fairly widespread. I'm thinking probably about at least 4 or 5 couples right now. The woman was concerned about how much her future husband drank. And she talked to her future mate about the drinking. And he said, well, you know, I'm getting that under control. I'm going to go ahead and I'll drink less if we just get married. It'll all work itself out. Don't worry. The woman was thinking, well, I am a little worried, but he said this, he's made this promise, and surely he will go ahead and after the wedding, things will work out. In every case that I'm aware of, it got worse. The promise to change was never fulfilled. Such has also been true for verbal abuse and physical abuse. A woman is, or could be a man, but looking at it from the perspective of a lady, which is probably more common, a woman is physically abused. She's hit, she's struck. Oh, I'm so sorry, when we get married, it'll all be different. Or a woman who's verbally abused. Well, yes, but after we get married, things will change. No, it doesn't change. Usually it just becomes worse and worse. If people are not willing to change prior to getting married, they're probably not going to change after marriage. There's an old illustration. I'm not sure where it's come from, but it's a great illustration for those who want to get married. It's often been used by premarital counselors. The counselor will sometimes have a chair or maybe a table and ask usually the woman to get up on that particular chair or table. And then the counselor will say, as she's up there, he'll hold up his hand and say, pull me up! And the girl says, well, I can't. I'm not strong enough. I don't have the ability to bring you up to the chair or bring you up to the tabletop. And the counselor says, well, let's try something else. And he once again clasps her hand and pulls her down. Removes her from the table or removes her from the chair. The counselor, of course, in this particular illustration is trying to make this point. It is easier for the good person to be pulled down than to go ahead and pull up that bad person to where he or she needs to be. Now, this is a good illustration. It's been helpful to some people, but it's also an illustration that's a biblical illustration. I said we're going to read from the book of Deuteronomy, and now it's time for that. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy 7 starts with some information about the various ites that were in the land of Canaan. Canaanites, Amorites, Hittites, all kinds of people who were doing very bad things. God says to his people, when you come into this area, these folks need to be removed. These people are going to be a bad influence on you, so you do not make any friends. You do not enter into relationships, such as marriage, with the ites of Canaan. Get rid of them. In verse 3, which we'll read, God said, certainly do not marry these people. Neither shall thou make marriages with them. When it comes to thy daughter, thou shalt not give unto his son. And when it comes, to his daughter, thou shalt not take, that individual for a marriage. Now, why would God tell people? Why would God tell his people that when they came into the land of Canaan, you do not allow your sons and your daughters to marry these folks? Well, if we read just one more verse, Deuteronomy 7 verse 4, we have the answer for. Here's the reason. God said, he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods, so will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and he will destroy thee quickly. That's the illustration that we gave just a moment ago. God says it is easier for those people to pull you down than for you to pull them up. God's people, if they married pagans, God said the pagan, the non-Jew, is going to be the most influential in this relationship. And we can't have that. That's going to destroy you. That's going to wreak havoc with your spiritual life. So you make sure that you avoid this situation. Many, as they think about marriage, never give any consideration, or almost no consideration, to how this relationship, joining themselves to another individual, how this relationship is going to affect their eternal spirit. Deuteronomy 7, though, says in the clearest possible terms that our associations, and certainly this is true of marriage, associations matter, and they matter greatly. They matter so much that in the next verse, Deuteronomy 7, verse 5, God says this, but thus shall ye deal with them. Ye shall break down the rollers, and after you do that, ye shall dash in pieces their pillars, and hew down their asherim, and burn their graven images with fire. God, in the next verse, Deuteronomy 7, 6, said, you're a holy people. And as a holy people, you do not need to be involved in any way with these heathens. Now, there have been Christians who have chosen a spouse that had a different religious faith. And it's created significant difficulties, lifelong difficulties. And if you don't believe that, talk to somebody that's made that choice. There have been other people who have decided to marry someone because of the appearance. She's so cute. He's so handsome. Well, in 30 years, they might not be so handsome. They might not be so cute. Well, he makes me laugh. Well, maybe today. Maybe tomorrow. But the person who's not trying to live the Christian life, probably not going to be laughing and smiling all that long. Marriage is a divine institution, and it is one of the most important decisions, one of the most important choices we'll ever make. And we have a world full of people right now who are making either the wrong choices about marriage, or they don't have enough information to make the right choices about marriage. Think again, page 76, Voice of Truth. Don't you get married and stay with a person for just a few years and then dump them for someone else? Don't you get a divorce? How sad. When we think about being a Christian, there's a lot of information that our world has forgotten. And if we're going to be the light to the world, as we have discussions with people, these are things that we need to talk about. Otherwise, God's will is simply going to be unknown to the people in our society. And that's a sad thing. That's a wrong thing. Tonight, we hope that you're someone who's a Christian, someone who has a basic understanding of what the Bible describes in so many areas, and you're willing to communicate this information to the people that you see. That's part of being a light. Part of our job as a child of God. If you are not yet a Christian tonight, we'd like to offer you the opportunity to become a child of God. If you have faith and you want to live as the Bible describes, you're willing to repent. This evening, you confess that Christ is the Son of God, the only hope we have of salvation, and all your sins can be forgiven by being baptized into Christ. Then you can go out and share the good news of the gospel with others. if we can help you become a Christian, if we can help strengthen you as a Christian, if there's anything that we can do, whether it's related to marriage or something else, would you let us know about that need as we stand and sing the selected song?